Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? This is Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk Radio with special co-host Evan. Actually, he's not even a special co-host. He's the third member of the team. So actually, it's the Lee and Keys and Evan Real Talk podcast. Tonight, we got a special show for you guys. We're going to do a year review show. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff tonight. Tonight's show is, you know, we decided to schedule it for 90 minutes because, you know, we want to definitely talk about our points. Maybe do a little bit of back and forth concerning, you know, what we thought of other people's points. But tonight is all about having fun, celebrating the world of mixed martial arts from 2020. As everybody knows, 2020 was a tough year as far as live sports, especially when COVID first popped off. The UFC was one of the first sports that was actually the first sport to actually hit the Royal Rumble with live events. But tonight we're going to celebrate the world of mixed martial arts from the year 2020, and we're going to have fun doing it. So if you call into the show and, you know, you want to jump in and talk, we might have time at the end of the show to take some listeners, but being that it's already scheduled for 90 minutes, we're probably just going to trek through the show and give our opinions and probably have some good conversation about why we pick what we pick, ask each other why we did that, or, you know, we just going to have some fun tonight. I got my man Keys on right now. Hey, Keys, what's going on, man? Happy New Year, bro.
Happy New Year, my guy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, man. I was just telling the people, man, we're going to have some fun tonight, man. I know that in our group chat between me, you, and Evan, it's definitely been fun in that. So I'm quite sure we're going to bring that to the folks tonight, and I can't wait.
All right, bro. Well, what category you want to get into first? Is Evan in here?
Evan said that he's going to be a couple minutes late because there's an accident by his house. But look, hey, before we jump into that, though, you wanted to talk about something else tonight, so we can do that real quick.
To be honest, I'm not sure I remember what that topic was. I mean, if you remember it offhand, we could definitely talk about it, but I don't remember it at this time what it was.
Was it the John Jones thing you wanted to talk about?
I don't remember specifically I don't really know what it was.
Because I thought John. Oh, you know what? I'll read your text. I got our group chat up. And you specifically pointed me out at the end of your text. And I was like, okay, I'm very interested. Hold on, let me get to it. I should have had it up, but I thought you would have remembered. Damn, where's it at? I didn't know we talked this much.
It'd be like that. You end up scrolling, you can't even find the rest of it.
Yeah, but it was something because you was like, Lee, you're going to be shocked at my take on this. And I was like, whoa. So I was definitely like, very, very shocked. But that's okay, man. Damn. I hope Evan okay, though. Because he said that it was a bad accident by his house. Well, hopefully whoever was in the accident, I hope they're okay, that he's okay also, you know. Okay. Your textman said we may have to go through our year-end review show and get to some other topics after because we need to talk about the John Jones recent comments. I have a bit to say on this, and I will not be going my usual route, Lee. Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point.
Okay, so can you read that back one more time?
All right, hold on. You said, damn, I just closed my phone out. You said, hold on, I'm getting there. Because you actually had me excited when you sent this. I thought you were going to show my boy John some love, but I might be wrong.
Nah, you just need to read it again. I have memory loss. I don't remember what we were talking about. I really don't remember.
Because I want to say John had commented on something that DC said about Stipe being his rival, his rival, and not John Jones. And then I want to say John came back and said, well, I can't be your rival because you never beat me. I want to say that was the topic. All right, here we go. He said, we may have to get through our year review show and get to some other topics afterwards because we need to talk about John Jones' recent comments! !! I have a good bit to say on this, and I will not be going my usual route, Lee. !! And then Evan retorted, let's go in all caps. And then, I'm going to have mostly all my, that's okay. That was about something else.
Okay, so I think I know what I was talking about. So I had to, because Jones has, there's been a lot of things about Jones lately that I have been thinking about, and there's a lot of things that I had a bit to say about. So that's why it was hard for me to remember that particular thing. Plus, we have so many conversations in our group chat that it's hard to
yes,
remember every one for me because I got like short term memory loss, man. It's bad. But so the thing that it was that John came out and said, I want to pull up the exact thing that he said, but it was something along the lines of he was getting back at critics that were saying that, you know, about how he moved up to heavyweight and, you know, is dodging Israel Adesanya and is dodging Jan Blachowicz and all this. And that was like the easier route, you know, to just leave the division so he didn't have to fight Adesanya and all this stuff. And then John came out and pointed out how I want to say it was sarcasm. His comment on this, like the way he worded it, had like a lot of notes of sarcasm in it. He was just pointing. He was kind of agreeing with critics and saying, "Yeah, you know, I took the easier route by moving up to heavyweight, where you know Stipe Miocic is the champion." You know, one of the main guys I want to fight going there is Francis Ngannou, you know, the hardest puncher and all this stuff and, you know, much bigger guys. And he was like, yeah, but I took the easier route by not wanting to fight a middleweight that is moving up to 205 and a bunch of other guys, you know, at light heavyweight that would have never had a chance to achieve their dream of getting the belt if it wasn't for me. So basically what I was coming to say and the reason why I said I'm not going to take my usual route on this is because usually I'm always a harsh critic of John Jones. I feel like talking about John Jones is a lot like talking about LeBron James because it's like when you have an all-time great, even though they're in different sports, I feel like they get criticized in similar fashions because of how great they are, and they get held to such a high standard after all that they've achieved that it's like once they have, you know, merely an off night or, you know, one thing goes wrong or they say the wrong thing, it's like, wow, you know, it's like, you know, knives and pitchforks, you know, at them. And I'm usually pretty much a harsh critic of John in the sense of, you know, criticizing him and kind of disagreeing with a lot of the things that he says. But this thing that he said, and I am on his side for this, that this year. I think you will be happy with this. People cannot say, and Adesanya can definitely not say, okay, he needs to just be quiet, okay? Because the thing is this. If Adesanya fights John Jones, he's going to lose so badly. He's going to get embarrassed so badly versus John Jones. He should not even want that fight, okay? He should not want that fight. He should want to keep his O, okay? Because a lot of guys don't get to keep their O. And if he doesn't fight John Jones, he may very well keep his O, because I do think more than likely he beats Jan Błachowicz. Even though Błachowicz, oh, I always have him lose and then he wins, I think more than likely Adesanya will beat him. And I think Adesanya, you know, Jones, you know, these critics, they cannot say that that is taking the easier route. Going to heavyweight was probably the most badass thing that John Jones could have done out of anything. You cannot tell me that staying there and fighting Jan Błachowicz, that he's letting them take your belt and then fighting either Błachowicz or rematching Reyes, you know, because even Reyes, you know, because when he was responding to the critics, he was responding to Reyes because, you know, a lot of people were saying that he left 205 because he was running from the rematch with Reyes. So to say that he is running from a rematch with Reyes or scared of a fight with the champ Błachowicz or scared of the challenger Adesanya is absolutely asinine and despicable to even say, because those are not challenges compared to the guys that you would fight at heavyweight. Okay, none of those guys are beating any of the guys that Jones is going to fight at heavyweight. Stipe and Ngannou would destroy all three of those guys. You think Adesanya can go up there and fight with Stipe and Francis Ngannou? No, he cannot. He is way too small. He is built like a number two pencil, okay? Francis Ngannou will tap his chin and he almost got taken out of there by Gastelum. You think he can go in there and box with Stipe and Ngannou? So for any critic, what I'm trying to say is for any critic to even insinuate that John Jones is running from any of those fights at 205 and took the easier route by moving up to heavyweight, that is such a terrible and despicable, disgusting take. And I hope you take it back. I hope you take it back because it's terrible. And that is a very, very casual fan thing to say. You don't obviously know the game. You don't know the game, because if you knew the game, you would know Adesanya cannot beat John Jones. He's not going to beat him. He's not going to beat him. So that's the end of it, okay? He's too small. He's too frail. All he has is his striking. And we all know Jones does a lot more than strike. What happens when Adesanya gets slammed to the mat? He's going to get tapped out in two rounds, you know, maybe even one being on the mat with John Jones. So we can just stop that talk right there. We can just stop it. There's no need for it. We already know who's the more complete fighter, so we can stop being casuals and saying that he's running from a fight with Adesanya. Okay? The big fights are at heavyweight, and we all know at the same time that Reyes' fight had a flash in the pan versus John Jones. Then he fought Błachowicz and got KO'd. That was a flash in the pan performance, and he hasn't been the same since. Reyes had one night. And we all know Jones destroys guys every time he rematches them. So what makes you think that he would be running from a rematch with Dominic Reyes? You are out of your mind, and you are a casual fan if you think he run from a rematch with Reyes. You have not watched the game tapes. Every time he rematches a guy, he destroys them. And it's not even remotely close. So you cannot
– Okay, Keys.
I'm sorry. Did I lose
okay,
you?
Keys. Okay, Keys. We got it. I think John definitely moving up to heavyweight was not an easier
heavyweight
route.
Heavyweight is a real challenge.
Yeah, I think heavyweight is not an easier route. I think him actually being dedicated to moving up to heavyweight by putting on the extra pounds, putting on the muscle, shows how dedicated and serious he is about to move up. I don't see him coming back down to 205. Unless he moves up to heavyweight and get totally dominated, probably. Let's say if he goes up with that, he fights the winner of Ngannou and Stipe, and he gets knocked out, and then he fights somebody else and gets dominated. I might think he might move back down to 205, but until I see that, I think he's dedicated to heavyweight, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he does in the heavyweight division. What's going on, Evan? Happy 2021, bro.
Happy 2021. You guys can hear me?
Yeah.
Evan, don't tell me, Evan, don't tell me that John Jones took the easier route by going to heavyweight. Don't even think it. Don't even think it, okay? Because we all know he's a more complete fighter than Israel Adesanya, and that is a pipe dream. That fight is a pipe dream, and it's a myth. He will not beat John Jones. None of those guys can beat him. Heavyweight is a real challenge.
No, I agree that John going to heavyweight versus him staying at light heavyweight and fighting Reyes, who had, you know, a great performance and may just have, you know, John's number. But then you saw what happened. Reyes got beat by Jan. And Jan, no disrespect to Jan, but I don't think he's that good of, you know, of a light heavyweight. You know, he – at one point, I think he was like 0-4 in like his last four fights. So I don't know what he's found recently, but no, Jones going to heavyweight is real challenges because Jones has always been a tower over the light heavyweight division. His closest fights were the Gus fight number one and the DC fights, but even the DC one fight wasn't that close, and then the rematch was close, but then Jones head kicked him in the head. But then, you know, we all know about the PEDs, but we won't get into all that. The challenge at heavyweight is real. You're not going to tell me. I think Jones actually beats Stipe. I think he might actually handle Stipe quite easily. I want to see the Francis fight. I want to see Jones versus Francis. That's another time what we're talking about, but I want to see that fight.
All right, man, look, enough of John Jones. Enough of John Jones banter. Let's give the people what they want. Let's have some fun. Everybody get their energy level up because we're about to hand out our awards, man. I don't even know where I want to start at, but let's start here. Let's start with the upset of the year. And I'm coming to you first, Keys. Who do you have as your upset of the year?
Okay, the upset of the year. So the first, I'm gonna go with the first fight that came to mind when you said upset of the year, because I really only think there's only one major upset that comes to mind for me, and this was a huge upset for me. I left the place with my head down. I was in a depression state, bad, and it was definitely a huge upset to me. Tony Ferguson versus Justin Gaethje. Ferguson losing to Gaethje has to be the upset of the year for me. And for me, it's the upset of the year because you could not convince me with anything that Justin Gaethje had what he needed to beat a guy like Tony Ferguson. You could not convince me of that debate. When it was leading into it, I told one of my best friends, I said, we're about to put the pay-per-view on. I'm just telling you, the whole night leading up to it, I said, I'm just reminding you, there is no way in hell Justin Gaethje is beating Tony Ferguson. There is no way. He doesn't have what he needs to beat this guy, and he's way outmatched. And he took the fight. I mean, I guess they both took the fight on short notice, but Gaethje really wasn't even preparing for a fight. Ferguson was training for a title fight. So even so, with that, the short notice factor. So to me, that's the upset of the year. Justin Gaethje beating Ferguson.
Okay. All right. I like that one because I think when we did our predictions, I want to say we went 3-for-3 for Ferguson winning that fight. And he definitely didn't look good in that fight. He took a lot of punishment in that fight. I thought the referee probably should have stopped it in the fourth round. But I get it. Tony is one of them guys that, you know, maybe you'll send him out on his shield. But it was definitely Gaethje looked surprisingly good in that fight. Tony looked surprisingly bad in that fight. All right, Evan, what's your upset of the year, buddy?
All right. So this one, it's kind of a joke, but it's not really because, in my opinion, like the upset of the year is obviously the category, the way we're defining it is that, you know, a big win that was not supposed to happen, a.k.a. as Justin Gaethje beating Tony Ferguson. We all didn't expect that. But to me, I think the upset of the year is Volkanovski beating Max Holloway in the rematch, because I just can't believe at the amount of people that are upset over Volkanovski winning. Like, the amount of outcry that Volkanovski won that fight, to the point where multiple betting sites actually refunded people because they thought Max Holloway won. So to me, that is the upset of the year because of how the outrage of upset Max Holloway fans.
Evan. Okay. The fight was a good fight. Volkanovski came in as a champ. Holloway came in as the challenger. I watched the fight. I want to say I watched the fight twice that night. I still had Max winning three rounds to Volkanovski. But I can understand how some of the judges gave it to Volkanovski. Now, as far as the gambling sites, I think that's taking it a little bit too far. You know, as far as refunding people their money back, that's kind of like BS. But the fight was super close. A lot of people were enraged about the scoring. But I can see where you're coming from as far as being upset. My upset of the year is Blachowicz beating Dominique Reyes. Because Reyes had came in off of his quote-unquote robbery, lost to Jones. You know, some thought he had won the fight. Jan was coming off first-round KO of Corey Anderson. And this fight just happened to be for the light heavyweight championship because Jan had vacated his belt. Reyes was the favorite to win. He was definitely the favorite to win. But one thing about Jan, and me and Keys predicted he was going to beat Reyes, is Blachowicz sticks to his game plan. He does not defer from his game plan at all, except in the Santos loss. And when he deferred from his game plan, he ended up getting knocked out. And Jan might not be the most exciting fighter, but he is super technical, and he goes about his business the right way inside the octagon. And when he knocked Dominique Reyes out in the second round, I think I had that as the upset of the year. Any thoughts?
Keys?
Who'd you have?
Blachowicz over Reyes.
Oh, yeah. I actually forgot that one was in 2020. You know, I mean, I could see, you know, from the casual fan perspective, I could have that being a big upset. But for me, I had Blachowicz winning from the start, and I think I picked Blachowicz. So for me, it wasn't an upset because I called him, but I think the general fan, that was a huge upset. So I give you a lot of points for that one.
I definitely agree with that being an upset because I personally think the fans kind of just automatically had Reyes as the uncrowned champion because of the performance against Jones, but then judging screwed him. And what really bums me about that fight is I actually told someone on Twitter actually posted about that Jan was going to beat Reyes by a second round knockout. And I tweeted at them and I was like, yeah, if you put $20 down, that'll be $380. And he's like, oh, I don't bet. And I was like, I'll bet for the both of us. And I forgot to. And then it happened. Jan knocked him out second round. And then the guy that I tweeted, he tweeted at me. And he's like, congrats on your money. And I was like, shut up. But anyway, you don't know how sour I was. That was probably the easiest $400 I could have made, and I messed up so badly. But I agree. That honestly, I think that one, Tony fight, the Justin-Tony fight, is a tie for the upset of the year because the way the fans had Reyes just on a pedestal they had him on the highest pedestal for Jan to just knock him right off, and he did. He knocked him out. So I agree.
All right, man. Moving on to our next award. Coming to you, Evan, on this one. Give me your newcomer or breakthrough fighter of the year.
Ooh. You know, I don't want to be like, you know, the casual one here, but I feel like the obvious choice you have to go with just the, you know, we're not talking about wins, but we're just talking about like, you know, the statement that he's made so quickly throughout, you know, such a fast time. And, you know, for now, I got to go with Hamza Chimaev. I think he's just stunned the world, you know, similar to the way Conor McGregor did. Just he's just kind of been put at a halt because of the pandemic. But I could only imagine how active this guy could have been, you know, in a healthy world. Like, he could have been champion by now at how active he was. So, yeah, for now, I think I'm going to go with Hamza Chimaev.
Okay, hold on, Evan. I gotta come at you with a question. Didn't you think that he would lose to Edwards, though? Or you thought he was going to beat Edwards?
I admit, I don't remember what I said, but I probably said Edwards was going to win. But I think, honestly, I was just picking emotionally because Edwards needs to win. Like, Edwards can't risk losing because if he loses to the unranked or the 15th-ranked welterweight, then guess where he's going? He's going to Bellator. So, you know, I don't know. I can't remember what I said, but I just think the surrounding environment, everything around him. He's you know, he's probably one of the most unknown fighters to the casual fan, and I hate saying casual fan, but like. You know, not a lot of people know him because not a lot of people probably can even say his name. But he's got a million followers on social media, which I hate that matters, but it does. But yeah.
Okay. All right. I was just following up. All right, Keith.
Yeah.
Who your newcomer or breakthrough fighter of the year?
So I have two guys that I had in mind for this one. But I feel like since we're going to do a Fighter of the Year and Breakthrough Fighter of the Year, I feel like that allows me to separate them. If I had to pick based on guys that I've watched, I would say Kevin Holland gets this one. But I feel like through Fighter of the Year, and I actually haven't even seen this guy fight, so it's hard for me to do that. But I think Khamzat Chimaev has to be the Breakthrough Fighter of the Year, at least for me, because he really came out of nowhere. And I'm actually to the point where I'm still trying to figure out who he is. I was watching a doc about him the other day to figure out who he is. So, yeah, but he's my breakthrough fighter of the year. He came through and is smashing guys. So, that's Chimaev is my breakthrough fighter.
Oh, man. Well, yeah. Okay. All right. I end up going a different way. I went down a beaten path. Because I was, of course, going to go with Holland, but I wanted to go a different route. I went with a female fighter who actually has definitely looked good to me in her last two fights. She only fought twice this year. I went with Taya Santos, man. I liked what I saw from her in her last two fights. Of course, she beat Molly McCann in a dominating fashion. You know, she won by unanimous decision. She had good striking in that fight. Her takedown was very good in that fight. She was going for submissions. She wasn't just laying on her. You know how, like, when people take you down, we want them to advance their position. We want them to be doing some things, not just, you know, humping. And I like what I saw on Taya Santos, but she really stuck out to me and her last fight against Jillian Robertson. And what was another dominating performance. In that fight, she even had a 10-8 round. scored by two judges. So I'm looking for big things out of her coming up in 2021. You know, she debuted on the Dana White Contender Series in 2018. She lost her first UFC fight in 2019. But she rebounded really good in 2020. So I'm looking at seeing what she's doing in 2021.
I like that. I like that one. I honestly didn't even think about that. This one was a tough one to pick. Honestly, it's hard. It was hard to really think of a newcomer or breakthrough star kind of without, because I was thinking about Holland, but Holland just, he's been in the UFC for a minute. You know, he was a Dana White Contender Series fighter. So I'm thinking about it, but then Hamzat just made the most sense. But I like that one.
I thought you would go with Pico though. I thought you would go to Bellator with newcomer or breakthrough fighter. I didn't think you would go UFC.
I respect that. I didn't think about Pico. Pico, he's a tough one. He's an interesting character. I'm excited to see him when he's fighting in his 30s. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah. All right, man, let's keep it moving. Key's coming at you with this one, man. Give me your knockout or submission of the year.
Okay, so the knockout of the year for me has to be, there's definitely a couple contenders for this one, but I think probably the most impressive one that I saw was that Joaquin Buckley KO. That Joaquin Buckley KO was unbelievable. He had I want to say he threw a kick and the guy caught his leg and then he spun. I don't know exactly what to call it professionally, but the guy caught his leg and then he jumped and spun the other leg in midair and then knocked the guy out with the other foot. And it was just, wow. I don't know the other guy's name offhand, but that walk, you guys know the one I'm talking about. I'm sure everybody knows the one I'm talking about. If you saw it, you definitely remember it. That Joaquin Buckley KO, for me, by far KO of the year. That was amazing.
I think that knockout is probably going to be everybody's knockout of the year. Because it was so original. It was probably the first time we ever seen anybody do it, especially with both feet being in the air at the same time because the guy was holding his foot, and then he leaped off his other foot and kicked him. But, yeah, that Buckley knockout was crazy. But let's see, where did Evan go for his knockout or submission of the year?
All right, well, I must admit that the Joaquin Buckley one, I assumed was going to be one of you guys' choices because of the fact that it is, that one. And I actually, I put it in my notes that I went half and half, but since one of you I went Buckley, I'm going to go with the one that I liked technically better, and that was the Kevin Holland knockout of Jacare. A lot of people miss the initial shot that sets up the knockout because, the videos that they post show Holland, on his hips and then, launching a punch that hurts Jacare. But there's one when Holland's on bottom and, Jacare's, holding him and Holland lands a great clean shot to the jaw. And you can see Jacare was immediately hurt, and then that's when he falls off. And then that's when Holland decides to whop him with the wallop. And that's what got the finish. So, personally, I think that should be the KO of the year. And it meant more to Holland in the sense that he just got 5 wins in one calendar year, where Buckley, is now the holder of an amazing knockout, but now he has to perform to high standards every fight. So, I got to go with Kevin Holland's knockout over Jacare for a KO of the year.
All right, can I give y'all a little nugget on this? Kevin Holland knocked out Joaquin Buckley. Got his knockout.
Mm-hmm. I forgot about that because that's it.
Yeah.
People keep talking about Buckley being a man, but it's Buckley got slept by Holland not too long ago, and I mean slept. So let's not forget that.
All right, man. I went a different way because I thought Buckley would have been one of the knockouts. I thought Garbrandt may have been one of you guys' knockout. I'm quite sure none of us was going to pick Sugar Sean knocking out Eddie Wineland. So I went with a submission, man. I went with Aljamain Sterling submitting my boy Corey Sandhagen. Sandhagen was on a 5-fight win streak. Aljo was on a 4-fight win streak. This fight was basically a title eliminator fight. Both guys were looking good after this fight. I think when this fight was announced that I was a little bit shocked that Aljo would take a fight, being that he was basically the number one contender, which I thought he would be the number one contender. But, you know, Dana White ended up giving Jose Aldo the title shot, and Aljamain Sterling stepped up and fought Corey Sandhagen. And, you know, I thought this would be a tough fight for Sandhagen, but I didn't expect him to get rear naked choked in under 2 minutes in the first round. Because I've been driving the Corey Sandhagen bandwagon probably since he made his UFC debut, and this submission came out of nowhere. And it actually made Sandhagen look really pedestrian. But then Sandhagen came back and knocked out Marlon Moraes. So, yeah, man, I won my submission of the year, Aljamain Sterling, over Corey Sandhagen.
I like that one. I agree. That's a huge one. That one actually stung a lot for me because I am the same as you, Lee. I'm a big Corey Sandhagen fan. I've been a fan since, he debuted in the UFC. And I was really excited for him to get that fight because I really thought, you know, he could have stole the shine on Aljo, but Aljo came out and just proved that, sorry, you're not taking this title shot away from me. And then Corey went and knocked out Marlon, so then he really secured the title shot for Aljo, hopefully, because we're waiting on the rescheduling. But I agree, that is a great pick. It was incredible. I do a rematch would go differently, but
I do too.
The record states that was an incredible submission, and we'll see what happens next. But good one, I like that one.
All right, Evan, coming at you, man, with this one, man. What was your favorite UFC, Bellator, MMA event of the year?
Oh,
why?
You know, this one, you know, there's plenty of events, you know, throughout the calendar year, and especially in all of MMA, you know, not just Bellator or UFC, but for me, the best event of the year easily had to be UFC 256, which was headlined by Deiveson Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno. We had Tony Ferguson versus Charles Oliveira, the Kevin Holland knockout, Cyril Gane knocking out JDS. And then, personally, my favorite was Rafael Fiziev knocking out Renato Moicano, which I almost put on my knockout of the year, but I don't think a lot of people, you know, knew about that one. But that is my event of the year. I think that was the perfect just amount of violence, but also just, you know, entertainment for the fans that, you know, want to see a little something else. You know, you had the knockout, but then you had that outclassing performance by Charles Oliveira against Tony Ferguson, and then you had the draw war with Brandon Moreno and the champion Deiveson Figueiredo. So honestly, this year I can't name a better one. So that is mine.
Yeah, actually that was definitely, because I was going into Moreno will pull out because of the short notice, and he did take some punishment in his fight against Roval. So I kind of sort of thought he might pull out, but that fight was a banger, and Holland knocking off Jacare was good. Yeah, 256 was definitely a standout event. What about you, Keys? What you got as your event of the year, bro?
My event of the year is that Ortega versus Korean Zombie card. That Ortega versus Korean Zombie card.
You did brag about that one. Yo. Go ahead.
That Ortega versus Korean Zombie card was not only my event of the year, but my event of all time. That was the best event I've ever watched in the UFC. Better than 205, better than 217, better than any of these cards. I said that Ortega versus Zombie card was my all-time favorite card that I've ever watched. Better than 205, better than 217, better than all these marquee cards, better than any McGregor card that I probably bragged about. So, and then any other cards that I'm probably forgetting, big cards that have happened. And I even liked it better than that Aldo and Jeremy Stevens card a couple years back that I also bragged about that year. Because I think when we did our year in review show that year, Lee, I had that as my event of the year. That Aldo Stevens, T-shirt Torres was on the card. Couple other guys too. I think Poirier and Alvarez was actually on the card too. That was my favorite event that year. But that Ortega Zombie, that was the best card I've ever watched, and I was glued to that card. Unbelievable.
That's crazy because you did come on the show. Just so people know, when we did a review of that show, you actually came up here glowing about that show, and you said the exact words you just said, that was part of the best event you ever seen. And I think what made that event so good was that there were a lot of lesser-known fighters on that card that put on great performances and great fights. And normally, a card like that would normally be a fight night card because of the lesser-known fighters that were on that card. But everybody that was on that card, man, they showed up and showed out, and that card was really, really good. That was a good card. I went with UFC 248, man. Outside of the main event, which we'll talk about probably next. Outside of the main event, that card was good. We had the Wally Zhang versus Joanna fight, which is probably the fight of the year, or at least top five fights of the year, depending on who you ask. I had as the fight of the year. Then you had Darius versus Close, which was a great technical fight in the beginning. And then Darius caught him in the second round with that TKO out of nowhere. And then we had Neil Magny versus Gene Ling. Neil Magny coming off a suspension, but he had a great performance in this fight. Actually, he had a dominating performance in this fight, because I actually picked Gene Ling to win this fight, because normally Magny doesn't put together like two good fights back to back, but he definitely made a liar out of me. Then we had Sugar Sean O'Malley fighting for the first time since his suspension, and he had a first round TKO KO of Quiñones. But I think the fight that was actually the two fights that were on the undercard were actually the best fights outside of Joanna and Zhang. We had Mearshirt versus Wynn. Wynn won that fight with a rear naked choke after, it was kind of like the fight was kind of back and forth, but Mearshirt was just so much better on the ground. And once he got to the ground, you just knew that he was going to kind of like, he was going to submit Wynn. And the last fight that I definitely loved on that card was Cowboy Oliveira versus Max Griffin. You had the striker versus the BJJ guy, and that fight was a good fight. And, man, UFC 248, outside of the main event, was a great card. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. It probably doesn't rival 256 as far as outside of the main card and part of the top two fights on the prelim, but it was a good event.
I agree actually wholeheartedly. That had plenty of good fights on it. It was the final card, because I think that was March 7th. It was the final card before we kind of lost mixed martial arts for a minute, especially with fans. So that was a very important card. You know, the main event was sadly a lackluster, but we will get into that later. But yeah,
All right, man. Well, Keys, this is one that you wanted us to throw in, so I'm definitely going to kick it to you first. Which fight did not live up to the billing, a.k.a. which fight is our snooze fest of the year?
Okay, snooze of the year, this is extremely easy. Israel Adesanya versus Yoel Romero is easily my snooze of the year. That fight was so bad. I actually was watching the highlights of it on YouTube. I think it was either earlier today or it was last night. But I was laughing watching that fight because it was so terrible. I couldn't even believe my eyes. I was like, wow. And then in the last 10 seconds, these two dudes had the audacity to try to rev up the fight and try to start swinging wildly at each other and then be in each other's face once the bell rang. Where were you guys in each other's face this whole 25 minutes we had to suffer through? We had to suffer through it. And then in the last 10 seconds, they want to swing wildly, and Romero wants to, you know, be saying things in Adesanya's face, and they're talking smack to each other. Man, come on, man. That was pathetic. And that's why it was totally warranted for them to have to cut Romero after that, and he had to go to Bellator, because that was the worst performance I think I've ever seen in middleweight history. I've never seen a more terrible performance in any middleweight fight, and I've seen quite a few middleweight fights, and that's on a champion and a contender. Worst performance, and I don't even care what the excuse is. That fight was basura.
And the crazy part is about this fight, I think everybody was so amped up and excited for this fight going into it, because you had Yoel Romero going against Israel Adesanya at his first title defense. And we know how Yoel, you know, how he can perform. If you just go back and watch the Robert Whittaker fight, he put on a hell of a performance. And for them to come out there in that first round, I think they threw, a combined 8 strikes, and most of them were leg kicks. It was just like, man, what the hell is going on? And then for Izzy just to sit back and accept that Romero wasn't going to do anything, it was just bad, man. It actually made Derrick Lewis and Francis Ngannou look action-packed. And we all know how bad that fight was.
Terrible.
Yeah, terrible. All right, Evan. What was your snooze of the year, bro?
You know, I hate to continue the attack.
Pile on.
What's that?
Pile on. Go ahead.
In all honesty, you know, it's the snooze of the year has to be Izzy versus Romero, because it was booked as something that was going to be such an absolute banger. And not for nothing, honestly, it had to go that way because of the co-main event going the way it did. There was just no way they were going to outmatch that fight. So literally they just decided, you know what, let's just stink up the place. But it was sad. It was just a very, very sad, you know, sad performance by both. Both are at fault. I hate the division. I hate how some people actually try to give the fight to Romero. And it's like, no one deserves that fight. Should have just been a draw. It should have just been a no contest, and we should never have to see it again. We would never will, because Romero's a Bellator. Anyway, that is my upset. Upset. That is my snooze of the year. I'm just upset about it.
Man, because that fight just had – it was just – our expectations of that fight was so through the roof, and it was Izzy's first title defense going up against a banger, and it was just like, oh, man, let's see what he can do. And it was such a letdown. I'm not going to pile on. I'm going to go another way. And I kind of sort of knew that we would, like, go Izzy versus Romero, but I wanted to go another route. And I know – that both of you guys are big fans of this guy. But Connor versus Cowboy was a snooze fest to me. I don't know whether or not we've talked about this during the year, but the UFC didn't build up to this fight like they normally do with Connor fights. It didn't have, like, all the hype, all the, like, glitz and glamour. I don't think the UFC was behind this fight as much, but the fight just, maybe because it was so short, and maybe because we knew Connor was supposed to be Cowboy, and then the way the fight ended. The fight ended with a shoulder strike. Really? A shoulder strike? So, to me, yeah. That was kind of a snooze. I think what made it a snooze to me was, you know, normally the UFC put the hype train behind Connor so hard, but they really didn't hype this fight, man. And it kind of, like, gave me cause to pause about the fight because they didn't put the hype machine behind him. And then when the actual fight came around and to see the outcome like that, yeah, it just didn't live up to it for me. So I had that as my snooze of the year. How you feel about that, Keys?
Keys, go ahead.
I mean, compared to the fight I hoped it would be, it's understandable to say that was a snooze. I get you. I don't blame you.
If I may, I actually had a second contestant for my snooze of the year, and I know this is kind of stupid because of how the fight went, but I personally think it makes sense, and this was the main event of UFC 250, which was Amanda Nunes versus Felicia Spencer.
Yeah.
I truly thought that Spencer was going to do something and not just get absolutely obliterated for five rounds, and then for Amanda to literally spit in her face and put the belt on her after she got the crap beat out of her. I'm just like, because it was just embarrassing. It was like, it should have got stopped way earlier. There was no point that fight should have ever happened. It was just a terrible, one of those terrible, terrible matchmakings, and it was just a snooze. I was tired. I had no desire to continue watching that fight. And yeah, that was one of my secondary. But Izzy Romero, of course, the lack of action took the cake.
I mean, yeah, Izzy Romero easily the snooze fest of the year. But I think the part about the Felicia Spencer and Nunez fight is I think me and you both picked Spencer to win that fight, Evan. I thought she would do more. And she just looked so average. And actually, she looked below average after she looked so good against Cyborg. She looked good in her fight against Cyborg. And then she looked like she shouldn't even be in the same octagon with Nunez, but that's a credit to Nunez. That's how better she is of everybody in that division, man. So, but yeah, Spencer let us down that night. All right, man. Look, we got our last three categories. Keys, I'm coming with you on this one. Hey, yo, take your time with this one. We still got like 35 minutes left in the show. What's your story of the year, Keys?
Story of the year. This was the only one that I really had to think about. For me, it would probably be between Jones. I mean, I really like Jones. The heavyweight was a big. There was a lot of big stories. It was crazy. Like, the whole world was in shambles, but the UFC had kind of a really great action-packed and, you know, kind of drama-filled year. It was very, very controversial situations, retirements. But I'd say the story of the year for me was probably Khabib retiring, but not really retiring, and we don't really know if he's retired. The reason why it's the story of the year is because it was so, the skepticism around it is ongoing, and we still don't know what's happening, and it's still being debated, and there's still meetings that are like set to happen to decide whether that was, you know, whether that was legit or not. And so to me, you know, there are other stories that probably beat that one, but to me, that one was probably the one that I was most caught on to. That was the one that I, that really got me thinking the most and really started getting the gears going for me. So while there was other great things and big stories that happened, that one just really caught me. So yeah, Khabib leaving his gloves in the octagon and then kind of still being the champion is probably my story of the year.
All right, let me ask you this. When he first said he was retiring, what was your first thought?
Well, I'll tell you this. I knew he was retiring right when he won the fight. Right when he won the fight and you seen Gaethje tap, I was in the room with like probably a handful of other people, and I looked at it and I said, and I looked at everybody. I stood up and I said, he's going to retire right now. Guys, watch, he's going to retire right now. I could feel it. And everyone was like, nah, no way. Why would he retire? Like, after such a good performance, like, he's not going to retire. I'm like, yes, he is. I'm like, I can see it in his face. He's done. I was like, he's going to retire. He's putting the afro on, and he's going to get ready to take those gloves off. And then he walked over, and you've seen his corner trying to get the tape out from around his wrist so he could get his gloves off, and then he left them there. So that was my first thought. When he retired, my first thought was, I knew it.
That's crazy because when he, after the fight, I just knew it was going to be like some talk about George St. Pierre, you know, UFC, you know, I need this fight, la, 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 for my 30-0. You know, that's the first thing I thought about. But, man, he went so far left from what I was thinking to retirement. And actually, I want to say after he said it, I rewound it to make sure I heard what I heard, and I was just shocked that he retired. But at the same time, this has been a year that, you know, we have seen quite a few retirements. You know, Cejudo, DC, Khabib, I want to say Ricardo Lamas retired this year. So maybe this was the year of the retirement, but that was probably the most surprise of retirement. But that is a big story because of the talent in that division and what are we doing with the title. So that retirement not only affected 2020, but is affecting what's happening in 2021. All right, Evan, what's your story of the year, buddy?
Well, you know, just to, you know, just to give my piece on the Khabib retirement, I hope, just want to say it, I hope Khabib does stay retired. You know, I don't know too much about martial arts. Like, I'm still learning the you know, this art of it. But to me, the most respectful thing you can do when retiring is put your gloves, leave your gloves in the octagon. And I just don't feel it's respectful to do that and then come back within, like, a year. Like, it's not even been that long, and they're already trying to get him to come back. And that just infuriates me. But we will talk about that another time. My story of the year, personally, has to be the UFC signing Michael Chandler. That has been a long time coming for me. I've wanted to see Michael Chandler in the UFC for a long time. I remember when, I think when Eddie Alvarez was still champion, that that Michael Chandler was a free agent, and there were talks of him coming to the UFC, but he evidently returned to Bellator. And then finally, contract, you know, expires, and Bellator just cannot give him the number, and the UFC's got him, and I can't wait. I think it's an incredible pickup for the lightweight division that is already impeccably stacked. But I think it's probably one of the most talked about things too. You know, all the fans are just wondering when he's going to fight, who's going to fight. Now we finally have a date. You know, he'll be the co-main event of the Conor card if he's fighting Dan Hooker. There's a tough opponent, but personally, I think that's a hand-picked opponent. I hate to say that, but, you know, I think that's the fight they think he can win and then, you know, just kind of keep his stardom going. But, yeah, my story of the year is the UFC signing Michael Chandler.
I think the thing with the Chandler signing that stood out the most was not only did he sign, he was a stand-in replacement for Gaethje and Khabib right off the rip. It was like he signed his contract, and next thing you know, it's going across Twitter that he's the replacement for whoever falls out or if something was to happen to the fight. I think that said a lot. I kind of agree with you about hand-picked opponent, Dan Hooker. You know, I thought they would have gave him. I'm quite sure they probably offered him Ferguson, but he probably turned it down. They probably offered him. I would have liked to see him versus Arkenta myself, but, you know, that ain't what happened. They gave him Dan Hooker, and we know how I feel about that. But I'm looking forward to seeing what he looked like moving up from the B leagues to the A league. Let's see whether or not, you know, his talent is what the UFC thinks it is. Because a lot of guys that normally come from Bellator, they don't fare so well in the UFC when you fight top-notch competition every fight. So we'll see what happens with him. My story of the year. UFC fights at the Apex Center. I don't know whether or not anybody anybody's watching like me, but I've been excited about all the fights they had at the Apex Center. When COVID first jumped off, I wrote an article saying that the UFC should probably hold all their events at the Apex Center because you can control the environment. And lo and behold, they started having fights at the Apex Center. But the thing about the Apex Center that I really, really, really love is the smaller octagon. The smaller octagon make the women and the guys come in there and engage. There isn't a lot of room for you to run around. So you have to engage in a fight when you're fighting at the Apex Center. I was like on U stage. Because remember they had the fights in Jacksonville when they first started hosting live events. But I was like, why would you use Jacksonville when you have your performance center in Vegas? But I want to say Vegas wouldn't allow them to do it. So once they started using the Apex Center, man, I stand on it, man. My suggestion, if I was the UFC president, I would get rid of the bigger cage and all the fights would be in the smaller cage because those fights just seem to be so much better when you're watching them. I want to say the card that Key said was his card of the year, I want to say that was fought at the Apex Center. I'm looking it up right now, but yeah, what do you think about my story, man? Any comments? Suggestions?
Keys?
My bad. I was trying to look up if that Ortega zombie car was at the Apex. But, I think that's a huge story because it's, you know, that's a – because of the problem that it fixed, which I think is a major problem that the UFC has, is – having a lot of fighters on their roster that really just do enough to win and don't really want to compete or perform, you know, for the fans. You know, it's more about let me just outpoint this fight, you know, and throw like, you know, a couple extra jabs and just keep my distance so I don't take any damage, but I can still be up on the scorecards. And it's just, you know, I understand like there's certain fighting styles that kind of, that's their base of what they do and things like that. And I understand winning fights is important, you know, especially champions, but it comes to a point when it's like, what are we really paying for? Like, what are people really invested into the sport for if we're going to watch, you know, everybody just want to do enough to win and not really want to perform or have, you know, standout nights, you know, standout finishes and things like that. That's what, you know, MMA kind of is wanting to, you want to defeat your opponent, not just slide, you know, not just slide past them on the scorecards, you know. It's about defeating somebody, you know. So, and maybe doing that and showing dominance. So I think the Apex and having the, you know, the smaller cage, like you said, has forced guys and girls to engage each other more. And I think that fixed you know, that has partially fixed that problem for the UFC, because like you said, it's caused the guys and the girls to engage each other more, and it's resulted in better fights because of it, because they're not able to, you know, they're not able to just run around and avoid their opponent, you know what I mean, and throw a jab and just kind of keep their distance. There's really not enough space to fight that kind of fight, you know, and that's what we've seen. So that's my thought on that. I think that's a great – that's a great story of the year, because that was actually huge. I'm kind of mad I didn't think of it.
Yeah, and the Ortega zombie fight was on that was on Fight Island. That was on Fight Island. All right, man. Here we go. Get into our last two topics. I think on the men's side, we might all have the same person. But I'm going to start with the female fighter of the year. Coming at you, Keys. Who you got?
Hold on. Give me 1 second, because I got to just make sure I got this right. I'm pretty sure I do, but I just want to make sure so I can at least talk about it a little bit, because I know – I want to say we might not have a unanimous pick for the females. We could have a unanimous pick for the males. So I'm going to say there was some standout female performances, but I'm going to say my female fighter of the year is Mackenzie Dern. And the reason why I say that is because, first of all, she fought 3 times in 2020, and she went 3-0 in those fights, and 2 of those were first-round submission wins. So that's something, first of all, that the females have been lacking is, you know, fights that have finishes. You know, lately, you know, I'd say in the past year or two, the females have had, like, I would guess a majority of their fights have been decision fights. And like I was saying, you know, in relation to the Apex, a lot of times you see, like in that fight, it was Michelle Waterson and I forget who Michelle Waterson fought, but there was that one fight where it was like, it just seemed like they both did just enough to, like, best each other on the scorecards, and it was a true snooze. That one, that was a true snooze. I forget other girl's name.
Was it Claudia Gadelha?
No, actually, it was Carla
Angela
Sparza. It was Waterson versus Sparza, and that was a true snooze. But what I'm saying here is that Mackenzie Dern had 2 first round submission wins out of it, or 3-0 run in the year 2020, and that was actually in 7 months, because the first fight of those 3 was in May 2020, and the third one was in December 2020. So it wasn't even like she took the whole year to do it. She had 3 fights in 7 months and won all 3. So, I mean, and those are all on big cards. You know, she had the Covington-Woodley card, the Woodley-Burns card, and the Figueiredo-Moreno card. So she definitely was showing up, you know, on nights when it made sense to show up and to show out. And she definitely did that and bounced back, because when she first came on the scene in the UFC, you know, there was a lot of hype behind her, and she did well, but she didn't come right out the gate. You know, she had a decision loss to another female that I always talk about, Amanda Ribas, fair enough, but you know, that kind of slowed her momentum down, I think. And then of course, I mean, she also, I don't know if she witnessed the birth of her daughter, or if she had a son, or I know she was pregnant, so I know she had a baby, so it's understandable she that slowed down. But then she came back in, and she kind of hit the ground running with that. So that, to me, it does more than enough to come around. Mackenzie Dern, my female fighter of the year.
That's a good choice, man. Yeah, she did have a baby. She came back. And one thing about Dern that I really, really like that you brought up is she doesn't go in there to try to get to the Georgia scorecard. She goes in there trying to get a finish every fight. And it's like she's one of those action-packed fighters that I think the women's division needs, because normally when they're in big spots on the card, I think we talked about this, not to knock on the women, but normally their fights don't live up to the hype. I don't know whether or not it's the bright lights or maybe stylistically those two just aren't right for each other. But normally we'll come on our review show and we'll be like, man, what happened in this fight? So, but Mackenzie Dern is somebody that when she fights, you can best believe she's going for the finish, man. All right, Evan, who you got as your female performer of the year?
Ooh, that's a tough one. You know, in all honesty, like, it's, I don't want to say it's a tough category to pick, you know, because, like Keys was saying, there's not a lot of, like, you know, action-packed fights for the women. I don't mean that disrespectfully. I think we've talked about this before. But I got to say, honestly, I want to go with Valentina. You know, I just think, you know, she fought on the co-main of the Jones card, and she had great performance against Caitlin Chookagian. And then, you know, she fought recently against Jennifer Maia, and she got out-grappled for a decent time. And that showed that she was human, but then she came back and won a decision unanimously. Literally, like, she won the first round, got out-grappled in the second, and then went on to win the last three. So it was a clear victory for her, but, like, everyone wants to boast on the subtle moral victory of Maia getting her on the ground and just holding her there without actually doing anything. And I just think, you know, being able to show that weakness as a champion and as someone who basically everyone thought was the Nunes of the 125 division, just unbeatable, to show that weakness, but then come back and decisively win the last three rounds. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Valentina.
And that's so funny that it was like when she lost that round to Maia, Twitter was blowing up. Even the announcers was like, does she still have it? Is she still maybe hurt? Maybe the injuries dap some from her, la, 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 la. And it was like, man, calm down. Pump your brakes. She's coming off an injury. This is her first fight back. She got to see how her body reacts. And then she went in there and did what she do. She dominated Maia the rest of the fight. It was like, I kind of like forgot that Maia won the first round because she got dominated so bad in the last four rounds. But, yeah, Valentina, she's awesome, man. She's awesome. I mean, that's the only way I can put it. I really don't see nobody down there really giving her a fight right now. But do I really want to see her versus Nunes 3? No.
No.
I really don't want to see that. Although I do think that she was robbed in one of those fights. Well, I can't say raw. I think she got the short end of the Georgia scorecard. I thought she actually did better than she did. But I'm going with my female fighter of the year, and she didn't have the greatest year as far as record-wise, but as far as activity, she was one of the most active fighters in the UFC. No going with Angela Hill, man. I love everything Angela Hill represents, especially in 2020. She's willing to take fights on short notice. Even though she had a 2-2 record in 2020, I thought she actually beat Gedalia. So I think her record should have been 3-2. You know, she was the first African-American female to headline a UFC event. That's a great accomplishment for her. But I think the thing what made her stand out to me was the job she did on the UFC pre- and post-fight shows. The way she could break down fights and talk about fights on that show, it kind of showed me a lot about her skill and her knowledge of the sport. And normally the UFC don't put you on the TV to break down fights unless they see potential in you. Or, you know, well, I ain't going to say it. There is no or. That's the only way they're going to put you on TV is because they see something in you. Because if we look at it, Tyron Woodley was good on TV. Paul Felder has been good on TV. Dominique Cruz is good on TV. So I don't know about Rashad as much, but, you know, Rashad Evans is out there. But I thought Angela Hill had a good year. I'm looking for bigger and better things for her in 2021. But if I'm coaching Angela Hill, don't let your fights go to the scorecard. It seems like she always gets the short end of the scorecard. So she needs to become like Mackenzie Dern. She needs to go into every fight looking for the finish because the judges, for some strange reason, don't get her close fight. Just like the fight against Waterson, I thought she beat Waterson in that fight. If you looked at them after the fight, Angela Hill looked the same as if she walked to the ring, and Waterson looked like she just got beat up. So I gave Angela Hill my nod for Female of the Year.
Nice.
That's fair play. I mean, she had four fights in 2020. She's definitely active. And like you said, the fights that she loses tends to be the ones that make it to the scorecards. She finishes fights. You know, when it's her choice, someone's getting finished, she finishes the fight. When it goes to the scorecard, she tends to come up short. And a lot of people says some of those are robberies. So I like what you said about her not letting it get, you know, not letting it go the 15 minutes.
All right, man. Time to finish strong, fella. We done had a good show. Oh, man, we got about 13 minutes left. All right, Evan, you're going to kick us off. Who is your male fighter of the year?
Who? You know, I like this one because I feel like a lot of people, you know, want to pick, like, a champion or someone just of more, you know, more reputable, you know, name recognition. But my fighter of the year, I'm going to go with Kevin Holland. I think 5 wins in 1 year, regardless of competition, is something to be respected and something that's not often done. I think he's actually one of very few who have done that before. And he, you know, he did it like in great fashion, you know, topping it off, you know, banging it out with the Jacare knockout. So yeah, Kevin Holland is my fighter of the year.
It's hard to compete with five.
Right, go ahead.
Go ahead, Keith.
I was going to say, that's also another guy who had pretty much the same, almost the same scheduling as Mackenzie Dern. They both started that run because, I mean, she had a 3-fight run and he had a 5-fight run, but they both started it in May. So really, Kevin Holland, yeah, they were all in the same year, but he really fought and won, went 5-0 in 7 months, not a year. He went in 7 months. And I like to just bring that up because, you know, years ago, Lee, how I used to have to remind you of the timeline of Tyron Woodley and the run that he had was actually in a much shorter time than you used to like to make it seem, you know. But we won't get into that. But that's it's important to say because guys should get recognition for the work that they put in, especially on these crunch time you know fights where it's, you know, people like Angela Hill come out and they fight somebody, then 4 weeks later they fight again, you know, and a lot of times they win both fights. So and Kevin Holland had some of those, you know. He fought, then he fought again in 3 months, then he fought again a month later, then he fought again a month later, then he fought again, you know, about 6 weeks later. So, you know, between the time he fought Darren Stewart, the time he fought Jacare was like a month and a half, and he had 2 finishes. You know, and that just did a crazy run. So I love that.
Is Kevin Holland your fighter of the year too, Keith?
Yeah, Kevin Holland is my fighter of the year. Could you tell?
It's crazy.
He definitely isn't. And you know what I want to point out, too, is Evan said, I don't know anyone else who's done that, but I want to say, and I could be wrong, I want to say it was a little over it. Actually, no, I want to say, no, it wasn't. It was probably in like 10 months, which this is actually five fights in about 7 months, actually less than 7 months, but Adesanya did it. He fought five times when he first came. He fought five times within his first year in the UFC. He fought, he was fighting Anderson Silva, was the fifth fight of that run. And that was in, I want to say, February of his, like at the tail end of the, of his first year, but he had fought four guys up until that point. I'm pretty sure.
Hey man, I wrote down Kevin Holland too, but I'm gonna change my pick at the last minute. I'm going with Keys guy, man. I'm going with Brandon Moreno, man. Brandon Moreno had a good 2020, man. Actually, I'm gonna go back to December 2019. He fought Kyle France, who was actually a pretty good damn fighter. He fought him in December 2019, and then March of 2020, he beat Jussie Formiga, who was definitely looked at as one of the top flyweights in the world. He beat him by unanimous decision, and then November 2020, he beat Roval by knockout in the first round. And then we know what happened on December 12, 2020. He fought to a draw against Davison Figueiredo. But to me, he won that fight. I don't know. I know how they gave that. They made that fight a draw, because instead of them giving Brandon Moreno a 10-8 round, that round that Davison Figueiredo had a point deducted, they made it a 9-9 round, so that's how we came to get that draw. But anybody watching that fight, just by the eye test alone, Brandon Moreno won that fight. He went 2-1. Well, he went kind of like 3-0-1 in a calendar span dating back to December of 2019. But in 2020, he went 2-0-1. With that draw coming against Figueiredo for the flyweight belt. But I'm going to give it to Brandon Moreno, man. I thought I was definitely not a fan of him taking that fight against Figueiredo, but he proved me wrong. And if I was judging that fight, he'd be the champ right now. But I like the view that Brandon Moreno had.
Moreno is the true flyweight champ. He's a true champ.
I can't disagree with that. I really thought he won that fight. I thought that he was the aggressor basically the whole fight. Once he figured out Figueiredo, he used everything, all Figueiredo's weaknesses he used against him. Figueiredo was tired. Moreno circled to the right instead of the left, so that. That way, Figueiredo right hook wasn't available to him, and he just fought a brilliant fight, man. And you know, man, I was very impressed, and that's why I gave him my fighter of the year.
I like it. I like it.
I respect it.
All right, man. We got about five. We got about 6 minutes left. Just to recap, Keys, give me your winners again. Give me your male fighter of the year, Kevin Holland, right?
Male fighter of the year, I had Kevin Holland. Female fighter, I had Mackenzie Dern.
And your event was UFC 256. And
not true. My event of the year was the fight night card. It was Ortega versus Zombie.
That's right, my bad. Snooze Fest was Izzy versus Romero. Upset of the year was who again?
Was Justin Gaethje versus Tony Ferguson.
Yep.
Or beating Tony Ferguson.
And your breakthrough or newcomer of the year was who?
Chimaev.
Yep. And your story of the year was?
Was Habib retirement, but not really retired.
And your knockout of the year, once again, was Joaquin Buckley, right?
Yeah, it was Buckley.
All right, Evan. Run down your winners again.
So, all right, I got my notes. So, male fight of the year was Kevin Holland. Female was Valentina. Event of the year was UFC 256.
I got
you. KO of the year was KO of the year was Holland or Jacare. The snooze was Izzy Romero. My upset was Volk over Holloway 2. And my story was the UFC signing Michael Chandler.
All right. And who was your breakthrough fighter of the year?
Chimaev. All
right. And then for me, once again, my male fighter of the year, I went with Brandon Moreno. My female fighter of the year, I went with Angela Hill. My event of the year, I went with UFC 248. My snooze fest of the year, I didn't want to go with the guys and beat up on Izzy and Romero, so I went with Conor versus Cowboy. My upset of the year was John Blachowicz beating Dominique Reyes for the light heavyweight title after John vacated it. My breakthrough fight of the year was Taya Santos. My story of the year was the Apex Center with the smaller octagon, more exciting fights. And my submission of the year was Aljamain Sterling submitting Corey Sandhagen with a rear naked choke in under 2 minutes in the first round. Oh, man, this show was actually pretty fun. We haven't done one in a while, but it's just great to be able to reflect on such a good year for MMA, especially with COVID being around and, you know, sports being halted for a couple months. And the UFC was the first sport to get back going with live events. And it was fun to recap this year. I'm going to throw this out there. I'm going to ask you guys one more question. I know that we didn't talk about it. What are you looking forward to in 2021, Keys?
Oh, man. I mean, hey, the fight is in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
the fight is
on.
In 2 weeks. I'm looking forward to seeing the lightweights. You know what I'm really looking forward to? I'll tell you right now. I'm looking forward to finding out if Habib is gonna whatever that word is, if he's gonna relinquish the belt. I think that's the word. He's gonna relinquish the belt, and then the lightweights. It's gonna be to find out whether it's gonna be an open division, and they can just have the vacant title. And then let a whole bunch of these matchups happen because you can have, obviously, Poirier and McGregor are going to fight in 2 weeks. Dana White said it's probably going to be Justin Gaethje versus Charles Oliveira, which is the fight that I'm pretty sure I think each of us had said that was probably the fight on our show. So that will probably happen. And what's the other one? Your boy, Dan Hooker. Is going to be fighting Michael Chandler. So you're going to have all those fights are going to happen. And then they can just kind of scramble around and hopefully fight for a vacant title and maybe get a little tournament. That's what I'm looking forward to most.
I like it. I think Khabib, to me, we need to hear something by February, March. What is the plan? We need to hear something by then so that we can see what's going to be and what the division is going to turn out and what is Dana White and they're going to do as far as crowning the champion. What's your story? What you looking forward to in 2021, Evan?
I think number one, honestly, is just going to be, you know, just exciting fights. And I know that's kind of like a basic one to think, but like, you know, we talked about, you know, specifically what you said, Lee, how the Conor McGregor Cowboy, like, Conor knocked him out in 40 seconds, and, you know, that should be exciting, but it really wasn't. And the undercard sucked to that pay-per-view. So, like, the only thing that was exciting was 40 seconds of Conor whooping Cowboy's bottom. So, I'm just looking for, just looking forward to good fights. Personally, you know, to tackle on the lightweight conversation, I think that Conor Dustin is going to be for the title. They're just waiting to announce it, which I don't know why, but I guess they just don't care to. You know, I feel like they might not even announce it. They might just wait till last minute, and when Conor beats Dustin, they'll just strap a belt around and be like, yep, you're the champion now because we said so. But, yeah, no, just exciting fights, just activeness. Active champions. That's actually something huge to me. Active champions.
Ooh.
No. Shut your face. No, I'm just kidding. not for nothing. You know, also, another big thing that I would like to point out is active champions, but, like, no more super fights. No more, like, consistent, like, rematches and trilogies. Like, the heavyweight division has been on hold because of DC and Stipe. I'm tired of it. You know, I want to see Stipe versus Francis and get that over with so Francis can go fight Jones. I want to see Volkanovski versus Ortega. I want to see Usman versus Burns. I want to see these title fights to get down. Like, I'm tired of the rematches and the just all this other crap. So those are a few things I'm excited about or looking forward to.
What I'm looking forward to is two things. I want to see how the UFC is going to reintegrate fans. I think it's time to start reintegrating fans into live events. You know, I'm looking at, like, football games at Dallas Stadium, and it looked like there's about 20,000 people in the stands. Although that is a big stadium, you know, but there are fans in there. So I want to see how the UFC is going to start integrating fans back into the event. And then lastly, we kind of talked about this on our group chat. I want to see how the matchmaking is going to go in 2021. Are we going to have meaningful matchmaking in 2021? Will fights be made to further somebody up the chain? Are we fighting to ensure that the division is, you know, staying on course as far as making sure that challengers are identified and they're fighting the other challengers? Are newcomers given the opportunity to fight their way up? I'm hoping that meaningful matchmaking becomes a staple back in the UFC in 2021. But, hey, man, I appreciate you guys jumping on, doing this show. It's always fun doing this to reflect on the past year and to look forward to the new year. Hey, this is one of my favorite shows to do. I don't know why I get so excited about doing these year review shows, but it's just fun to me. Any last word, Evan?
excuse me. Number one. I want to thank you guys for, you know, bringing me into the show, allowing me to be part of it. Continue to be thankful. You know, as you mentioned, you really enjoy doing this. And this is the first time I've ever done a year review in anything. So this was very cool. Allowed me to reminisce in all the good fights that we've had and whatnot. But yeah, no, just can't wait for next weekend, I believe, or maybe 2 weeks from now, is the Holloway Calvin Kattar card. Can't wait to talk about that one with you guys, and just can't wait for a great MMA, just great MMA in 2021. That's it. Thank you.
All right, Keys, what you got?
Speaking of which, I'm looking at that Holloway Kattar card right now, and that card, my first impression is it's a hollow card. This is, oh, man. Yeah, well, we're going to have to talk about that one next week, but yeah, I think for 2020, my last, you know, one thing that I'm really happy about 2020 is that we were able to bring Evan onto our show. That was written, you know, that was a really big thing for me. It obviously was a big thing for him, but that was a big thing for me because, you know, it brought, you know, it made me even enjoy myself that much more, as I already enjoyed myself a lot. You know, kicking it, me and Lee been chopping it up for like 3 years, but 3 years or so, but bringing Evan into, we've always been talking about things with Evan, but he would come on as a guest. Bringing him as a host was probably where he should have been, and even sooner than that. But that was something that I was really happy with. So I'm grateful for that in 2020. And just the way that I feel like we've all come together and really like formed a team. You know, I really appreciate that in 2020. So that's probably what I'd leave off with right there. And I'm looking forward to another good year in 2021.
Yeah, man. You know, 2020, I really didn't know in March whether or not, you know, we would have been talking UFC in 2020. Although I had hoped that we would be talking UFC, but we just didn't know. But, you know, the UFC found a way to push through. Give us content, you know, give us stuff to tweet about, talk about, and it's just been an action-packed year as far as UFC event. For a while, I was kind of thinking that it was on overkill, you know, because I think I like when they do one fight night a month and one pay-per-view a month. I think that way you're not on UFC overkill and you're running to your TV every weekend to watch the UFC. Plus, it gives us time enough to, you know, reflect on the past weekend events and look forward to the pay-per-view that's coming up. And, you know, but, you know, as long as there are fights, we got something to talk about. So I guess I can't complain about that. Just to remind you two guys, don't forget we got our Zoom meeting tomorrow. To the people out there listening to our show, thanks for supporting us. Next week, we'll probably definitely give you guys some breaking news next week. Happy 2021 to everybody. Happy 2021 to my guys, Evan and Keys. And everybody take care. Wear your mask. Practice social distancing. Take care of yourself. Have a good evening. And we'll talk to you all next week. That being said, signing off, Lee and Keith.